Funding for this program was provided in part by AARP, the Foundation for Excellence in Louisiana Public Broadcasting, and by viewers like you.
Good evening, I'm Beth Courtney. Welcome to the campus of Centenary College in Shreveport, Louisiana, for the first statewide televised U.S. Senate debate with the top three candidates. This debate is presented by Louisiana Public Broadcasting and the Council for a Better Louisiana. We thank our public television and radio partners statewide, as well as WJBO in Baton Rouge, KTBS in Shreveport, C-SPAN, and the PBS NewsHour for also sharing this evening's program with their viewers and listeners.
And I'm Barry Irwin, president of the Council for a Better Louisiana, or CABLE, and thank you for being with us tonight. Over the next hour, we'll delve into many issues of importance to our state and country with our three invited candidates.
Participating tonight are Congressman Bill Cassidy, retired Colonel Rob Manus, and Senator Mary Landrieu. Thanks to all of you for being here with us this evening.
Our panel of journalists include Shauna Sanford, co-anchor and producer of LPB's Louisiana, the State We're In, Alan English, editor of the Times newspaper here in Shreveport, Stephanie Grace, a columnist for The Advocate, and Jeremy Alford, editor and publisher of LawPolitics.com. Now, we drew names to determine the seating and order of questioning, and the format this evening is designed to learn more about where the candidates stand on key issues facing our state. Now, our format tonight is a pretty simple one. Our panel of journalists will pose questions to the candidates, and each candidate will have 1 minute to respond. The panelists reserve the option to ask follow-up questions to ensure clarity in the answers, and if time permits, there will be a lightning round of quick questions to all of the candidates.
And before we go on, many thanks to all of you. We had hundreds of questions for the candidates via email and Twitter. You will certainly hear some of them tonight. We began, however, with an icebreaker question. Public opinion polls in Louisiana track a national unfavorable view of Congress as an institution. The very notion of public service has been questioned in increasingly bitter election battles. Would each of you tell us when and why you first decided to run for office? We begin with Congressman Cassidy.
It was in 2005, Katrina hit Louisiana. And there was a sense that our leadership had failed. There was a whole city that was unable to evacuate out of a Category 4 storm at first. And then, as it turns out, leadership after the storm failed. And then later on, it turns out perhaps levees had failed because of lack of leadership. I think many of us in Louisiana at that point chose to step forward. I've spent my life in service. For the last 25 years, I've worked in a public hospital for the uninsured, teaching young doctors, medical students, and residents how to be better doctors, but along the way, teaching others, treating the uninsured patient. After Katrina, I led a volunteer group of, 300 people to stand up a surge hospital within 3 days to welcome those folks who were fleeing the floodwaters in New Orleans. I think that formative experience at that time in my life led me to begin to run for public office. I consider it a continuation of the life of service I've done as a doctor working in a hospital for the uninsured.
Thank you, Colonel.
It was in late 2012, after I had been out of the military for about a year, after retiring for 32 years. And I saw that my country may be on a policy pathway that would lead us to an America that my grandson wouldn't recognize. I wore the uniform of this country for 32 years. I fought terrorists over the skies of Iraq and Afghanistan. I did that because I love America, I love freedom, and I revere our Constitution. America is the last great hope on earth. And this election, to me, is not about power. It's about restoring our country. And I believe that Louisianans deserve to vote for a conservative this November. As Mark Levin said last night, I am the conservative in this race. That's why he endorsed me, and that's why I'm running. Thank you.
Senator?
Beth and Barry, thank you so much, and LPB for having us all tonight. Let me just say that it wasn't until after college that I thought about running for public office. Of course, I come from a family that served for many years, and I think honorably and well in this state. Now, I'm the eldest of nine children. We had five girls and four boys. My mom stayed home and raised us for 30 years. I sort of looked at the two, mom and dad, and said, I think maybe I'll go into public office. So after college, some friends encouraged me. I ran for the legislature, didn't have much of a shot to win, and won, and then just continued to take one step in front of the other. I'm very interested that one of my opponents, Congressman Cassidy, said after Katrina, because in 6 years in Washington, he voted against disaster aid for Isaac when it hit his own district. I am very proud to have represented this state honestly, transparently, and I think effectively and passionately to bring aid to victims of disasters and survivors, to fight for new energy policy for our country that will make us energy independent, and a whole host of things that are important for leaders to support.
Thank you all very much. And now we're going to turn things over to our panel of journalists. And the first question will come from LPB's Shauna Sanford, which will be posed first to Colonel Manis.
Thank you so much, and thank you, candidates. Our first question is about Medicare. We received lots of questions about this topic. Like the rest of the nation, Louisiana's population of baby boomers is close to retirement age. Medicare will be under enormous financial strain due to the rising cost of keeping older adults healthy. So how would each of you put Medicare on stronger financial ground and protect today's seniors and future retirees from rising health care costs? And we'll begin with you, Colonel Manis.
Thank you. Well, the first thing we need to do is restore the $700 billion that have been taken from Medicare, first by the Obamacare bill that Senator Landrieu voted for, and then by the Ryan Murray budget that Congressman Cassidy voted for. And Senator Landrieu, the facts on how much you've worked for or not worked for the people of Louisiana are really borne out when the mayor of Washington, D.C. says that you're the senator for Washington, D.C. Well, we need to get Medicare on track and be solvent, and we have time to do that. The Board of Trustees shows that it's going to be solvent out to for about 20 years, so we have the time. We all need to come to the table together and develop solutions that will work for the people of the 21st century. Thank you very much.
And can I follow up with that? Do you have a solution to put forth?
We need to come to the table together and find solutions to make Medicare solvent, and we have plenty of time to do that as a nation.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Landrieu.
I support the Medicare program as we know it. It's a very important program for safety for our seniors. My opponent has no plan, as you just heard, and Congressman Cassidy voted to end Medicare as we know it, not cut it, but end it and go to a voucher program. He's voted for that consistently. One of the reasons why he's just showed up for the first time to this debate, because for 18 months he's been running away from his record, which I hope will get out tonight. I voted for $700 million in efficiencies for the Medicare program, the same vote that John McCain took, who was campaigning with him yesterday, put that money back into the Medicare program to strengthen it, and extended the life of the trust fund by, I think, about 12 years. Now, you're right, there's still strain on the Medicare budget, but I support the program as it is, and I also believe that other people, particularly people that work that are under 65, deserve health care, and we'll talk more about that later tonight.
Congressman Cassidy.
Yeah, I'm a doc who's been working in a public hospital for the uninsured. Oftentimes, the only coverage my patients had was Medicare. My mother lives with us. She's 92 years old. I know the importance of Medicare. Now, that said, Obama, when Senator Landrieu cast the deciding vote for Obamacare, it took $700 billion out of Medicare. It didn't put it back into Medicare, and there's going to be some questions of fact. We'll be posting on our website, BillCassidy.com, documentation for what I'm saying. It took $700 billion out and spent it elsewhere. It did not return it to the trust fund. On the other hand, about 20 years ago, John Breaux, Louisiana's own senator, came up with a bipartisan plan to save Medicare. Paul Ryan and Ron Wyden, bipartisan, dusted it off, brought it back up. It isn't a voucher system. It's like Medicare Part D. 85% of seniors like Medicare Part D. If you want to keep traditional Medicare, you can. But if you wish, you can choose another plan of your choice. It has been estimated by CBO to save money for beneficiaries and also to save money for the Medicare Trust Fund. It's a good bipartisan John Breaux plan.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on to Alan English. Alan, you have another question, and you begin with Central Andrew.
Great. We're glad to see you all here in Northwest Louisiana gathered like this, so thank you for being here. Ryan is one of many viewers who submitted questions for tonight, and a number of questions centered on foreign security. And here are three packed together as one question. They could be yes, no, but we're looking for you to explain out what your position is. First, do you agree with President Obama's military strategy against ISIS? Secondly, has the president overstepped his authority? And third, will you authorize the use of ground troops if that time comes? Senator Landrieu.
ISIS should be destroyed, and we need to do everything we can to eliminate it. It's a very, very serious threat, not only against the United States, but the region, which is an important region of our interest. Secondly, I do support the airstrikes against ISIS and believe that all presidents should have the authority to act when they believe that America is in danger. And thirdly, I would support the use of force. I think I would stop short at this point for boots on the ground. I think that we have made such enormous sacrifices in that part of the world. America must continue to lead. We have to be strong. We've got to work with our coalition partners. But I would support the use of force. ISIS is a threat, and it must be eliminated.
Dr. Cassidy?
Yes. First, the president has not presented a strategy. And the president so far has failed. He pulled troops from Iraq, even though he was suggested by his generals that he keep them there. As ISIS, he missed the warnings a year and a half ago of the gathering ISIS strength. As they began to invade Iraq, he called them the JV team. And then when they captured a weapons depot, instead of immediately bombing the depot, he waited, allowing ISIS to distribute those weapons across the region. Now, he has no strategy. So what we've had presented to us are the beginnings of a plan. I support this plan because it's the only plan out there. I'm not sure it's going to be adequate. They flew 93 sorties recently, and on the opening days of Desert Storm, I believe they flew 2,000 sorties in one day. That said, if he presents a plan involving our troops, I would have to look at it. I don't trust this president. I think he's a very poor commander-in-chief, and before I commit our young men and women overseas, I would like to see what his strategy actually is.
Okay, quick follow-up. Do you think he's overstepped his authority?
So far, what he's doing now was authorized by Congress for the initial steps he's done. If he goes forward, I would expect him to come back to Congress to get additional authorization.
Colonel Maness?
I flew in Operation Desert Storm, and that was an air campaign, Congressman. That was an air campaign that was part of a larger wartime strategy, so you're absolutely right. We need to have an air campaign that's connected to a strategy. This president has not presented us with a strategy. He's not defined the objectives of his operation. He has not defined success, and he has not defined an exit strategy, and that puts American sons and daughters in great danger while they're in harm's way. He has overstepped his authority. He should be engaging Congress. As a matter of fact, Congress has given him a blank check to fight an undeclared war in an offensive manner, and the two members of Congress that are sitting next to me should be back in Washington calling for a debate in Congress instead of allowing a recess to occur to wait and kick the can down the road. A declaration of war needs to be satisfied or not, and we need to figure out how to pay for this war because we can't continue to put these things on a credit card. Would I authorize ground troops? If the president could come in and satisfy all those questions and address the exit strategy and address the need for it and show us how he's put a coalition, and maybe the Arab nations will step up, maybe the Kurds will step up, maybe the Free Syrian Army, whoever they are, might step up. But eventually, ground forces will be needed. Thank you.
We turn now to Stephanie Grace, and she will pose a question to Congressman Cassidy.
Congressman Cassidy and fellow panelists, we heard from a lot of viewers also about health care, not surprisingly, including Mr. David Lindenfeld. His question is specific, actually, to Congressman Cassidy and Colonel Maness. He notes that both of you have opposed the Affordable Care Act, yet it includes popular provisions such as required coverage for pre-existing conditions. Do you favor this coverage? And if so, how do you propose to pay for it without an individual mandate? Mm-hmm. And for Senator Landrieu, you've defended your vote for the Affordable Care Act, even though you say it's far from perfect. What aspect of the health care law would you change?
Yeah, I oppose the, as a physician, I oppose the Affordable Care Act. I have found that when the patient has the power, the system lines up to serve the patient. However, when a bureaucrat has the power, it lines up to serve the bureaucrat. As it turns out, it is a bureaucrat telling people what they must purchase. Here I have a rate sheet, somebody whose insurance just renewed. It went from $725 per month to $1,200 per month, a 66% increase. Now, Blue Cross this past week is increasing rates by 20%. So clearly, this is the Unaffordable Health Care Act. How do you address pre-existing conditions? Republicans have proposed that all people will get everyone in the nation will get a tax credit only to be used for purchasing health insurance. If an insurance company received part of this tax credit, they would be required to give everybody of the same age the same rate. It doesn't matter if you've had a liver transplant, you would still get the same age-rated premium. By that way, we take care of pre-existings and we give the patient the power. By the way, different than the health care law that Senator Landrieu was the deciding vote for.
Colonel Maness.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is an abomination, and we don't need to not only repeal it and defund it, but pull it out by the roots. Now, my plan, it turns to the free market for solutions. First of all, consumers should be okay and allowed to buy insurance that fits their stage of life and what they need. A man who's not going to have a baby shouldn't be forced to buy maternity care insurance. State programs before Obamacare came into existence were responsible for health insurance, and we should return to that. We should be able to cross state lines and purchase insurance. That increases the market, increases competition, and drives costs down and keeps costs low. And finally, we need portability with insurance policies, so policies stay with the individual and you don't have to worry about going from job to job and losing your insurance, and that will address the pre-existing condition for most Americans. Thank you very much.
Senator Landrieu.
Stephanie, thank you for your question. First of all, Congressman Cassidy introduced a version of the Affordable Care Act himself under his name when he was a legislator in Louisiana, which he doesn't want anyone to know. And he mandated that businesses even under 50 employees provide direct coverage. He will not fess up to that, and all he talks about is President Obama. He has some answers to do for his own record. Number two, our country has struggled for 60 years over the question of how to provide affordable coverage and quality coverage to people in America who work 40 and 50 hours. It is unjust, unfair, and wildly expensive for our nation to have to treat people in emergency rooms when it costs everybody so much more money because we can't figure this out. The Affordable Care Act is not perfect. It needs to be fixed two ways. A copper plan could help make it a little bit more affordable, raise the subsidy additional subsidies, and then also allow insurance agents to sell. So there are ways to fix it. Not perfect, but we have to keep it and not, under any circumstance, repeal it.
Thank you, Senator.
Out of time. Jeremy offered your question for Colonel Maness.
Let's turn our attention to campaign finance for a moment, talk about the money that fuels politics. There are third-party groups, these independent groups, most notably super PACs, that are allowed to raise unlimited amounts of money to influence elections. How do each of you feel about that system? Also, if you could change one campaign finance law right now, what would it be?
Colonel Maness.
Thanks, Jeremy. That's a great question. Politics, from what I've learned in my short time in the business here, is a racket, for sure. There's too much money involved. But the federal government shouldn't get further involved by limiting our free speech. I agree with the Citizens United decision as things stand right now. And unless things were to be able to change, I wouldn't make any changes to current campaign finance law.
Senator Landrieu?
Well, the Koch brothers and Bill Cassidy have literally orchestrated a $25 million bogus campaign run on television. This is the first debate that he has agreed to show up. Maybe he's running away from his record and wants to just use the power of unlimited, undisclosed, bogus television ads to sneak his way into the United States Senate. I would overturn Citizens United. Corporations are not people. They should not be given unlimited rights to speech. The richer you are, the louder you get to speak. Our democracy is based on one man, one vote, one woman, one vote, and the power belongs to the people. Not that the rich have the power, but all power equally. This really distorts our democracy. You can see it playing out in this exact race in Louisiana. I want to run on my record of 18 years. I'm proud of my record. It's hard to get your voice over those bogus ads, and something needs to change.
Congressman Cassidy.
Boy, it's kind of ironic. If anyone noticed, they were outspending our campaign, their side, about 5-1 before Labor Day. And obviously, let's just be honest. Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who's all about gun control, put about $50 million into Harry Reid's PAC, who has been attacking us. If you notice, it was 5-1 before Labor Day and 3-1 after Labor Day. That was Senator Reid. You didn't know that because he had something like Patriot Majority or something such as that. They're doing whatever they can to get Senator Landrieu reelected because Mayor Bloomberg likes her because she agrees to restrictions upon your Second Amendment rights. Now, the NRA has third-party money coming from me, but at least you know who they are. They're the NRA. They're supporting the guy who has the NRA endorsement, not the person who has Mayor Bloomberg's endorsement. Now, I would like transparency. When Harry Reid pays for an ad, instead of hiding behind some patriotic sounding, you know, Tea Party sounding name, put, hey, this is Harry Reid. I'm supporting Senator Mary Landrieu. She was the deciding vote for Obamacare. I need her back. That would be the kind of change I would like. Can we put that in law?
Well, that was an interesting one there. Moving on to Shauna Sanford, and this will go to Senator Landrieu.
Thank you very much. Well, pay equity is another important issue that has the attention of our viewers. Pay equity. A lot has been written lately about rising economic inequality here in the United States. The richest 1% now own more wealth than the bottom 90%. Now, this is a three-part question for you. Are you concerned about this, the 1% versus the 90%? Would raising the minimum wage help the working poor, which so many here in Louisiana belong to that category? If not, what policies should Congress adopt to address gender and pay inequality in general? Senator Landrieu, we begin with you.
Yes, I'm very concerned about the inequity in the population of the United States, and we all should be, because this country is founded on a strong middle class, and we've really got to think carefully about how to grow this middle class. As president, as chair of the Energy Committee, and as a leader in many areas, I'm looking forward to using my clout to help build a stronger middle class. I support pay equity. My opponents do not. I support paying women the same amount of money for equal work. I support raising the minimum wage. My opponents do not. There are so many women that children depend on their salaries as well as their love and support. They depend on the money they bring home for their well-being. I think it's really almost criminal that my opponents will not support the increase in the minimum wage. I support pay equity. Women are still making about 67 cents on the dollar. For African-American women, it's even lower. These are things that we can do now to help strengthen the middle class, close that equity gap.
Congressman Cassidy.
Yeah, of course. Under this president, income inequality has increased. If you own stock with this president, you've made a lot of money. If you are in the lowest fifth of wage earners, you've lost. Under Obamacare, it's very clearly established that low-income workers, the bottom fifth, if you will, have had their hours reduced from 40 to 30 or even laid off as employers have worked to avoid the penalties of Obamacare. In Lincoln Parish, the school board recently took 400 lower-wage custodial and food service workers and converted them from full-time to part-time, explicitly because the school board did not have the tax base to pay the penalties of Obamacare. Now, if we want to do something about income inequality, we should repeal Obamacare and restore full employment. What laws can we pass? Right now, the best way to increase wages for those that are less wealthy is through using America's natural resources like oil and gas. We need to get out of the way, use our energy resources, create these good-paying energy jobs.
Colonel Maines.
Well, first of all, there these guys go again. You know, that last question, they're both complaining about the corporate dollars in their campaign war chest, and I'm supported by 41,000 individual donors. And that's the incumbent protection racket that I was talking about. But pay equity. I'm proud to have served with women in the United States Air Force for 30 plus years that got equal pay to me, and I absolutely support equal pay for women and equal pay for equal work. But that's not the issue here. The issue is we have a law on the books that needs to be enforced. The Equal Pay Act needs to be enforced. I'm not for a national minimum wage raise, but I've stated before that I believe that should be at the state level, and elected leaders at the state and the voters at the state should be able to experiment with setting a minimum wage under their conditions, and that could help the working poor in this state. Thank you.
I'd like to follow up. Congressman Cassidy, you're on record as voting against the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act.
Yes.
And the Paycheck Fairness Act. Why? Since
Yes.
you say you believe in pay equity.
Yes. The 1963 pay equity bill, I think it is, and the 1964 Civil Rights Act already outlaws discrimination between gender and race on how you pay somebody. The Lilly Ledbetter Act is actually a trial attorney bailout bill. If you will, a small businesswoman who bought her business from another can be sued decades later for things that allegedly occurred under a previous owner. That is wrong. It is wrong for that owner, and I oppose that bill.
Thank you.
All right, our next question, Alan.
Thank you.
Have it.
As we sit on Centenary College campus tonight, we can't ignore the pressing issue of student loan debt. Certainly has attention of Michael Byers and others who submitted questions. I mean, the budgets of colleges and universities, public and private, you know, they're under strain and stress. We've seen major changes in the last couple of years. But consequently, students are paying higher tuition, and the costs just cause them to graduate into debt. How are you going to address this problem?
Dr. Cassidy.
Oh, am I first?
You're first.
Oh. You know, I teach with LSU, so I still teach. I still, on Tuesday mornings when I'm not involved with official duties, I still teach. So I'm aware that student loan debt is a major problem. Part of it, though, is that as the amount of money available increases, universities increase their tuition. And that's been well documented. The other part, there's a lot of fraud in some of the programs, such as the Pell Grant. Over $1 billion a year is thought to be lost in fraud due to Pell Grants. Now, if we can, one, somehow figure out how to keep the universities from always raising the price whenever more money becomes available to borrow, and then secondly, eliminate the fraud, we can redirect those dollars to those that need it. But we also have to say part of the problem as well is these students are graduating into job markets, which are awful. They can't pay back their loan because they can't earn money. We need a better economy than the Obama and the Obamacare economy. Senator Landrieu, when she voted for Obamacare, a central vote, in a sense put a wet blanket over that economy. If we repeal that, they'll have more job opportunity.
You're out of time. Colonel Maness.
Unemployment rates for college graduates are sky high. And the only solution to the debt problem for college loans really is twofold. Create the jobs. We need to pull Obamacare out by the roots. It's destroying jobs in our state. I've talked to business owners in every parish, all 64 parishes in our state the last 18 months, and the small business owners that have less than 100 employees all tell me the same story. They're struggling to meet the requirements of Obamacare. They're struggling to create more jobs that they need to create, or they're struggling to redefine full-time job employees down to part-time job employees, and that's a disaster. Our college graduates need jobs that they can graduate from college and go into those jobs that are sustainable, long-term jobs. Like, if we unleash our energy sector, we would be creating those jobs, not just in certain parts of the state, but all over this state. And that's what our college graduates need. But I've also supported the HERO Act, the Higher Education Reform Opportunity Act, that will spread accreditation decisions out to the states and increase the market and competition and drive costs down.
You're out of time. Senator Landrieu.
I have two bills, and I'll talk about those in a minute, that will be very, very helpful, I believe, to the 600,000 people in Louisiana that have outstanding student loans. And you're right, it's a serious burden, and it's a serious challenge to all of us. It's not just a private luxury, it is a public good for people to have strong education. What frightens me the most is to think about one or two of these gentlemen being in the Senate and standing in line with Governor Jindal, who has cut higher education in the state by $700 million, the largest cut of any state in the union. I have fought against those cuts, and I've done a lot to make sure that at least we counter by supporting hundreds of millions of dollars to our HBCUs, which I'm very proud of. My passport to the middle class would mandate a lowering of the student loan. You can refinance your house, your car, you should be able to refinance your student loan, save each student $8,000. Number two, double Pell Grants. They're now worth less than 30% of the value when they were first passed. Neither one of them have supported my
Senator.
Bill. They should.
All right.
Yeah, I have one quick follow-up for Congressman Cassidy. Looking a student in the face who's trying to decide who to vote for here, what can you do for me tomorrow or in the first year to help me out with my loan stress?
I find that young people want freedom. They don't want their future mortgaged by debt and deficit, which is paying for benefits which will not accrue to them. And so first you have to understand that their motivation is for freedom. Now, as regards, oh my gosh, I don't mind somebody refinancing their student loan. I just don't think the taxpayer should have to pay for it. Taxpayers are struggling. They are, as these students are. Are we going to ask them to struggle even more for a taxpayer-financed refi? I don't think that's right. I have no problem with students refinancing. If they can get a better deal, they should. I just don't think the taxpayer should pay for it.
We're moving along.
Yeah. Stephanie gets the next question. It'll go to Colonel Maness.
Colonel Maness. As we all know, Common Core has become a controversial issue in Louisiana and all around the country. Our state superintendent of education is an ardent supporter of the state-developed standards. Our governor contends that the initiative represents federal overreach. Regardless of where you stand on that point, should the federal government play a role in K-12 education? And if so, what should that role be? Colonel Maness.
Thank you, Stephanie. The Constitution has no role for education in K-12 for the federal government. And I believe the Department of Education at the federal level should be dismantled. And I believe Common Core, which I'm opposed to completely, is a system that's being imposed at the federal level with a national testing standards and standards system that's unacceptable for the parents, teachers, and local elected officials. And that's where, if the federal government wants to play a role, block grant the dollars down to the state, local, and officials and the parents to use those dollars as they see fit to help their children in their education.
Senator Landrieu.
The federal role is very important, Stephanie, but it should be secondary to the state and local contributions, and it is. It represents less than about 10% of the funding. But as you know, there's such discrepancy in zip codes around the country. Your zip code shouldn't determine your future, what county or parish you're born in. So the federal government has a role to equalize opportunity, not guarantee success, but guarantee opportunity to succeed. That's why the federal government got into the business of funding. I worked with George Bush, not a Democrat, a Republican, to help bring accountability to funding to our public school systems. And have worked with all presidents of all parties since I've been there, three presidents now and six governors. I support state-based standards, which Common Core is. It's not a national mandate. It's developed by the state. In fact, our governor was a supporter of them before he decided to run for president of the Tea Party, which Rob Manis is a part
Thank
of.
You.
So,
Whoops.
Yes, I support Common Core. They are local standards.
Okay.
Thank you. Congressman Cassidy.
Stephanie, I think you're kind of, you have a multi-pronged question here, Common Core plus federal role.
Correct.
Okay. My daughter's dyslexic. And if there was a one-size-fits-all mode of education, it would not fit my daughter. Now, we've worked and my daughter's doing fantastic. But do I think one-size-fits-all? No. That said, if a state wants to fight among themselves, I also believe in federalism, the state can fight among itself and adopt Common Core. The federal government should not force Common Core upon states. They just shouldn't. By the way, although it was a state initiative to begin with, the kind of Obama sort of, my gosh, the federal government's going to tell us all how to live our lives, Arne Duncan began to require states to adopt Common Core if they were going to get any federal assistance. I oppose that, absolutely. The federal government should not be forcing this upon states. I'm out of time. Thank you.
I think Stephanie had a follow-up.
I think my follow-up is where you were going. What role do you think the federal government should play in K-12 education?
Is that mine?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry. He who governs best is the one that governs closest to the child. And it should be the mother that makes the most decisions about, or the father that makes the most decisions about a child's education. And then it should be the school board and the state. The federal government should merely play a role of making sure that if there are federal funds dispersed to the states, there's not fraud, ideally being a best practices sort of model. As it turns out now, the federal government will pick and choose as to what programs to endorse. I think that's wrong.
All right, Jeremy, you have the next question, and you begin with Senator Landrieu.
Senator, some of the most contentious issues debated on the Hill involve the federal budget and spending bills. Tell us what you believe to be the key federal funding areas for Louisiana that need to be protected. Also, if it comes up in the next term, and it looks like it may very well, would you vote in favor or against raising the debt ceiling?
First of all, disaster funding is very important, and I've been the leader of disaster funding in the Congress, both for our recovery here on the Gulf Coast and for help with Sandy as well and other disasters around the country. My opponent, Congressman Cassidy, voted against funding for his own district when Isaac hit. He sided with the Republican Party and the Republican Study Committee budget, which said, sorry, we can't afford disaster aid for Isaac. We can afford no offsets for people that make over $1 million, but not for disaster aid. So I fight hard for this state that is in the bullseye of disasters, and it affects South, Middle, and North. I also think that revenue sharing is an important thing to fight for. I have secured it as a junior member of the Energy Committee. I'm now chair of the Energy Committee. That funding must be protected. We need to save our coast. We need to build energy jobs, and that's what's at stake in this election.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Would you also vote in favor or against raising the debt ceiling?
I voted for America to pay its bills. My opponent did not. He also voted to shut the government down. I did not. That's a big difference in our records.
Thank you.
Dr. Cassidy.
Yeah, let's set the record straight. I voted for Hurricane Sandy funding. What I didn't vote for, about $30 billion. What I didn't vote for was what was added on top of that, which was not related to Hurricane Sandy funding. By the way, Governor Cuomo used that money to run radio ads enticing businesses from other states to move to New York. That's not quite the best use of taxpayer dollars from Louisiana. And the disaster relief she speaks of, Isaac was not mentioned in that disaster relief bill. That said, as we're going to speak about revenue sharing, that was actually Pete Domenici's bill, and which Bobby Jindal worked on the House side. I've also think carefully about that. I actually passed a bill in the House of Representatives that would almost double what Louisiana would receive from revenue sharing. It was bipartisan from drilling on the Outer Continental Shelf. Bipartisan, went to the Senate, was not even considered. Senator Landrieu's bill, she didn't bring up either. Harry Reid and the administration both said they were against it. It never came to vote. If she'd taken my bill and passed it, it could have been signed into law. As it turns out, not even her bill was considered, and certainly not mine. I would protect that funding.
And if given the chance,
ceiling?
Yes.
I've said before to my constituents, and I'll say again, I'll vote for any debt ceiling deal that actually begins to address the debt ceiling problem. If it lowers our indebtedness, I will vote for a debt ceiling deal. If you cut up the credit cards, you still eat. But if you're going to keep those credit cards open, my gosh, I'm not going to do that.
Colonel Maness.
Let's take the debt ceiling first. I'm not going to vote to raise the debt ceiling. We're $17.5 trillion in debt, and that's at national crisis levels. And both of my opponents have voted to raise the debt ceiling consistently previously. But as far as disaster funding goes, absolutely, we should make sure that disaster funding gets taken care of. That's why I proposed a standing disaster fund so dollars would flow immediately to victims of disasters so that there wouldn't be this debating and Washington nonsense like what happened with the Katrina bill, which had a $50 million indoor rainforest in it for Iowa. Now, why did the people in Louisiana have to wait to get aid because of that? There is no reason that anybody can justify for that waiting time. So let's get a standing disaster fund together for the people of Louisiana and make sure that they get their aid immediately. As far as protecting our coastline, Louisiana's coastline is the most important in the nation. And you know what, Senator Landrieu? The president's policies are on the ballot and they're in your person. And you know, we talked about energy jobs a moment ago, and they're hurting energy jobs. Thank you very much.
You're out of time. All right.
All right, to Shauna now with the next question, and it will go.
One. It's a little hard to get them in all in 1 minute, but
y'all are doing well. Shauna gets the next question, and it goes to
Congressman Cassidy.
Yes, it's hard to keep up with those two, Congressman.
Nearly all Louisiana residents age 65 or older receive Social Security. The program generates $18.2 billion in economic output for Louisiana. Yet year after year, the Social Security trustees tell us that the program faces financial challenges. How would each of you protect this vital program for today's seniors and strengthen it for future generations? Congressman Cassidy.
Yeah. Great question. Again, my mother lives with us. She's 92 years old. I'm so aware of the importance of Social Security. Turns out, though, the trust fund is going bankrupt. And so in about 12 years, if you're currently on Social Security, your benefits will decrease. Your current benefits will decrease by 25 to 30%. Those are for folks who are currently receiving. What Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan did 30 years ago or so, they went to those far younger and gradually increased the age of eligibility to preserve benefits for those who are on and those who are about to be, but also to strengthen the program for those who are coming along. Ideally, you do it as low as young as possible, like someone who's not yet born. But the reality is you've got to make changes someplace, and we're all living longer. I am committed to preserving benefits, Social Security benefits, for those who are on it, those who are soon to retire, and those who are going to be in the future. We can do that by gradually increasing the age for those far younger. By the way, Senator Landrieu has previously endorsed that concept, and we will post her endorsement of that on our website.
All right, Colonel Lanis.
Social Security is a very important benefit that most of us pay into and pay for and expect to get that. So let's talk from a principled perspective first. You know, Congressman Cassidy, you have voted to raise the retirement age to 70, and I've worked in operational fields with folks on out in the field for many years, and there's no way that a lot of these skills could be done up until age 70. So I disagree with that. And we shouldn't demand that current recipients of Social Security should take reduced benefits. So we have to protect that, and that'll be one of my principles. The other thing that we've got going, as the Congressman mentioned, is that we have about 12 years, so we've got time, and the folks that are coming into Social Security that are about 10 years out can have their benefits protected too. Where we need to really go to work, though, is in the Disability Social Security Fund. It's increased dramatically, the numbers of folks that are on disability, and it's just hard to imagine with the way safety standards are today that there's that many injuries on the job, and we need to look really hard at that for fraud, waste, and abuse, and that trust fund is going to run out in about 2 years.
Thanks. Senator Landrieu.
Now, there are about 550,000 people in our state on Social Security and some additional on disability. I agree with Colonel Manus. I don't think we should raise the Social Security age like Congressman Cassidy did to 70. There are some jobs that are very hard and people cannot work to 70, and I think that is a very bad policy. And that's one of the things that's at stake in this election. Let me finish, please. I also believe that Social Security is not an entitlement. It is an earned benefit. People work hard their whole life and pay into the fund, and they should be able to take it out. Now, in Madison Parish, African Americans' life expectancy is 71 years old. So when people say, well, people are living longer, maybe people in Connecticut and New York are, but I've got plenty of people in my state that are not living very long because their health care is not very good. So I'm not raising the Social Security age.
Thank you. And I think Shauna had a follow-up.
Well, I do, because raising the age has come up by Senator Landrieu and also Colonel Manus. So, Congressman Cassidy, I'd like for you to respond to that. We got a lot of questions from our viewers as well about your wanting to raise the age to 70.
Yeah, again, this was previously done by Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, and the fact that people don't talk about it is because it happened so it just didn't hurt anybody. If you pick an age in which someone, say, 40 now, and they would become eligible at 67 in a month. If they're 39, they become eligible at 67 in 2 months. If they're 30, you see where I'm going with this, down to 30 and 67 in 10 months. In so doing, they have time to plan for their change in retirement, but for those who are currently on, those about to be, nothing changes. It preserves the program as opposed to them having decreased benefits.
I think we're out of time.
25
Sorry
years.
About that.
Since this debate is being held in Shreveport-Bossier City area, home, of Barksdale Air Force Base. What have you done and what will you do to keep Barksdale, Fort Polk Army Base, and Belle Chasse Naval Base, all critical to Louisiana's economy, viable and off the base closing list? And let me add, as safe as you might feel any one day, the next day you could be the target of a budget cut. So,
Colonel Maness.
That's a great question. Well, what I've actually done for Barksdale is help create Air Force Global Strike Command as its first deputy director of programming and requirements. So I helped establish the first budget and shepherd it through the approval process. And my team wrote the first 25-year strategic plan that it's operating under today. But I've actually done that work on the ground in another state as a wing commander and installation commander in the Air Force, and worked with congressional delegations and local governments and local committees to keep a base viable so that its missions are appropriate to the national security of the United States. And that's the key. We have to constantly be working with all of the communities in the base and all of the bases and the Department of Defense to ensure that there are viable missions assigned to the base. And it's a continuous process that requires a lot of hard work and coordination between not just the Department of Defense and the service departments, but all of the local governments and local community leaders that aren't in government that want to stand for keeping their bases viable.
All right. Senator Landrieu.
Thank you. As the first Democratic woman ever appointed to the Armed Services Committee of the United States, I've been a strong supporter of our military for many, many, many years. I also served for 12 years on the Military Construction Committee and have supported literally, Alan, millions and millions of dollars of construction for Barksdale, for Fort Polk, helped to stand up Federal City, and Belle Chasse. Specifically, helped to land, as a leader of our delegation, the Global Strike Command, which is, and we're going to get not a three-star, but a four-star general at Barksdale, and we've protected it. And that will be announced very soon, so it's exciting. For Fort Polk, because Barksdale Ford was so successful, we created Fort Polk Progress that literally saved 5,000 jobs at Fort Polk. Our military is very important. That's why we need leadership and strength in Washington to protect these bases, and sending a rookie to the Senate is not going to do it.
All right, Dr. Cassidy.
Yeah, John McCain's been touring Louisiana with me. He was asked by a reporter what Senator Landrieu has done on behalf of the military. His short answer was not much. Now, that said, I'm quoting John McCain. The debt and deficit is what is killing our defense budget. And there's something called sequester, which is automatic budget cuts put into place to decrease that debt and deficit. House Republicans on two occasions advanced bills that would end these automatic cuts, restoring money to Polk, Belle Chasse, as well as to Barksdale. Harry Reid never took these up. Now we know why. Leon Panetta recently said the president wants these cuts to go into place because he wants to cut the military. As long as Harry Reid's Senate Majority Leader, these bases will be endangered. Senator Landrieu has already said that her first vote will be to reelect Harry Reid. Harry Reid, who has made the Senate a rubber stamp for Barack Obama. It shouldn't surprise us, Senator Landrieu supports Barack Obama 97% of the time. If you want to save those bases, elect Bill Cassidy.
This is actually going to be our last question in this particular round of it. It goes to Stephanie.
Okay. Fair warning, another multi-part question on climate change this time. Do you believe that climate change is real and that it's a threat to low-lying areas such as South Louisiana? Do you think human activity contributes to it? And what, if any, policies should the federal government pursue to combat climate change? Senator Landrieu.
Yes, I do believe our climate is changing, and I do believe that humans contribute. However, we have to be very careful about the policies that we promote. I am a strong supporter of fossil fuels. Yes, natural gas particularly, because it is a 50% cleaner burning fuel. We have 200 years of it. America could do itself a great service and great security, increase our security by promoting more domestic energy exploration and production. And I've been a strong supporter. I opened up 8 million new acres in the Gulf. I have secured expedited permits on Western lands. I do not agree with President Obama on his energy policies. I've now served with 3 presidents and 6 governors. I have had disagreements as well as support for some of their policies. We have to be careful about what we do, but we can build a strong energy future with Canada and Mexico and be energy independent.
Thank you, Senator.
Dr. Cassidy.
Global temperatures have not risen for 15 years, so there might be climate change, but we're not seeing that reflected in temperatures. We are losing our coastline, but that is relative sea level rise. If you compare, that's related to our levees on our river taking needed sediment from restoring our coast, as well as other factors that cause the land to sink as much as water rising. For example, in Florida, they've hardly seen any rising of the water relative to the beach. We've had far more. So really, if you want to preserve our coastline, I'm not sure that climate change is the issue as much as it is getting that sediment out of the Mississippi River, putting it out into the marshes where it can rebuild. That is what is important. As regards Senator Landrieu's support for the energy industry, I'll point out that her first vote is for Senator Harry Reid. Senator Harry Reid will never allow a pro-oil and gas jobs bill to come to the floor of the Senate. And she's already said that would be her first vote.
Romanus.
Well, it's evident that warming around the globe has occurred over the last 100 years, but there hasn't been anything seen in the last 16 years, some say even the last 19 years, or even 26 years. So I think we've got a lot more to learn about climate and what makes it change. I know the President and Senator Landrieu's policy is that we need urgent action on climate change, but you know, if we don't really know how the climate changes and we're not seeing any warming, I think that leaves that in doubt. And there are much more urgent priorities like eliminating ISIS, energy independence that both of my opponents spoke about, and getting our stagnant economy going again so our college graduates actually have long-term, sustainable, well-paying jobs to go to pay off those student loans. Thank you very much.
All right, we have time for just a few yes and no lightning round questions, one word answers, and we have a lot of them. We're only going to give you 3. So, and we're going to begin with you, Dr. Cassidy. Are you in favor of legalizing marijuana for medicinal purposes, yes or no?
Medicinal purposes, yes.
Yes, medicinal purposes. What'd you say?
Yes.
Manus?
No.
Landrieu?
No.
Is healthcare a fundamental right? Then we'll start with Dr. Cassidy again.
Yes.
No.
You said no?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you favor a balanced budget amendment?
Absolutely.
Of course.
Not an amendment, but a budget balanced.
All right, this is the last one, yes or no. I want you to rate on a scale of 1 to 10, 2 people, President Obama and Governor Jindal. All right, Cassidy. 2 people, President Obama and Governor Jindal.
No.
No. No? You won't do it? Okay.
No. Obama's a 0. Obama's going to go down as one of the worst presidents in
American history. All right, how about Governor Jindal?
And Governor Jindal, he's taking some tough licks. So I'd give Governor Jindal right now 7. He's taking some tough licks, but...
Okay. Manus.
0 and 5. And he has taken some hits.
All right. And Senator.
I would give Governor Jindal barely a 3. I've worked now with 6 governors.
Okay, he's short. 3.
And then I would give President Obama a 6 to 7. I think he's had some really tough issues to deal with.
All right.
Thank you very much. It's time for us to move now to closing statements, and as we did before, that we did a drawing and selected the order, and we'll start with Senator Landrieu, but we're down, because we're short of time, only 1.5 minutes for this closing statement because of timing. But a closing statement from each candidate, and starting with Senator Landrieu.
Well, first of all, I want to thank LPB and the Coalition for Better Louisiana for hosting this tonight and for being back at Centenary. I had the pleasure to represent the state and joy for 18 years in the United States Senate. And while President Obama is not on the ballot, the future of Louisiana is. And electing a senator that can get the job done when it comes to energy, building a middle class in our country and in Louisiana, supporting more domestic production, supporting the Keystone Pipeline, supporting the change in the Midland Pipeline that kept 25,000 plus people with natural gas, using my influence and my clout, which is really the people's influence and the people's clout in Louisiana. I think fighting hard for our state when it comes to disasters, disaster relief, both loan forgiveness, supporting our universities, and bringing billions of dollars to this state when it was necessary. I also believe supporting our seniors, not raising the retirement age to 70, keeping Medicare as we know it, supporting health care for people that work, and let's not repeal the law, let's improve it. I have some suggestions to do so. Finally, coastal restoration. Whatever we do in Louisiana won't be worth anything if we can't save our coast. The revenue sharing bill that I've passed, the sustainability efforts on our coast are paying off. Let's keep going.
Thank
you. I ask for your vote.
Congressman Cassidy.
In Louisiana tonight, there will be a woman who will lie awake, unable to sleep. She's not sure their family can pay their bills. She's seen her gasoline, her groceries, her utilities, all those bills going up, and now a 20% increase in her health care premium due to the Unaffordable Care Act. This is not despite President Obama's agenda. It is because of that agenda, an agenda that Senator Landrieu supports 97% of the time. She represents Barack Obama. I represent you. For 25 years, I've worked in a hospital for the uninsured, caring for families who had nothing, or at least very little. I've set up vaccination programs to vaccinate children at school, 36,000 against hepatitis B, at the school so the mom didn't have to miss work, nor the child miss school at no cost to the child or to the school system. That, I have been serving families like that for 25 years. When you walk into the voting booth, November the 4th, think about that family. It might be yours. Do you want Senator Landrieu to complete Barack Obama's agenda? If so, vote for her. If you want someone who's going to push to repeal and replace Obamacare, who's going to push for an energy policy to create better jobs and better benefits so that family has better wages, if you want someone who wants Washington to serve you instead of you serving Washington, D.C., then vote Bill Cassidy. Thank you.
Thank you. Colonel Maness.
I'd like to thank the Coalition and Louisiana Public Broadcasting and Centenary College for hosting this event tonight and the opportunity to participate. I've never run for office before, so many Louisianans don't know me. I'm the son of a hard-boiled Air Force Master Sergeant. At 17, I enlisted myself. I rose through the ranks, went to night school, and became an officer and an aviator. I've fought America's enemies in the skies over Iraq and Afghanistan. I've chased terrorists on secret missions in countries I can't name. I've commanded America's finest young men and women in life and death situations. And our country honored me with a Bronze Star for leadership. But our future is in danger from poor leadership by career politicians. If our leaders could anchor themselves more to the people they serve and be more devoted to our Constitution, we could put America back on track. Instead of decline, we could claim an American renaissance and a new century of greatness. My belief that America is our last best hope sustained me throughout my years of service. And I believe that our best days can still be ahead of us if our people will just rise up and make their voices heard. I'm offering my service and asking for your vote to create a government that's once again worthy of the American people. I love you. I love God. God bless Louisiana and these United States, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you all for participating, and thank you, panelists. Thank you, audience at home. We thank you so very much. On behalf of LPB and the Council for Louisiana Public Broadcasting, we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Good night.